And this is Live and Local. It's your connection to local music and more. On the show today, we'll be talking with Michael Luxner, who is music director of the Millikan Decatur Symphony Orchestra in advance of their season opening concert Saturday night. And we'll also talk with Jason Finkelman, who is the curator of the Sudden Sound Concert Series at the Krannert Art Museum in Champaign. They have concerts tonight and tomorrow night at the museum. We'll hear about those on Live and Local. Stay with us. Heard the Troika movement from the Lieutenant Kijé suite of Sergei Prokofiev. The whole suite is going to be on Saturday's concert by the Millikan Decatur Symphony Orchestra at Millikan University's Kirkland Fine Arts Center, Saturday evening, 7:30. With me on the phone is the conductor and music director of the orchestra, Michael Luxner. Thanks for joining us once again.
Always a pleasure, Kevin.
You have turned out to be one of my most regular guests, and you always have some interesting concerts, including this weekend. You've got one especially well-known work, virtually a Pops piece in Ravel's Bolero, and then one of the series of Roman pieces of Respighi, but you also have a new piece, brand new piece, I guess. It's getting its world premiere.
Yeah, it's, I guess we can call it a modified premiere. The premiere is of a percussion concerto. In fact, it's called Percussion Concerto by James Romig. He goes by Jake. And this concerto came about through a consortium of 25 percussionists. And what Jake has said is that any one of the 25 commissioning percussionists' performances could legitimately be called a premiere. So far, our performance on this Saturday night will be the first complete performance with orchestra of both movements. One of the movements will have been played with orchestra the night before Augustana College, and so they beat us by 24 hours on one movement, but we're the first complete performance. And someone played a movement or two over the summer with piano, and there's a version for that too. But I think we can legitimately call this a real premiere.
That sounds like it. I mean, the other people, they don't count. I mean,
no, of course they count. But no, there really is. I mean, beyond the little game, who won and all of that.
Yeah.
It's a premiere is an important thing. As any student of music history will tell you, or any conductor or any composer, a premiere is like the birth of a work. It may exist on paper and it may be there as a work of art, but until it's brought to life by a performance, that's really when it takes on a life of its own, and the way a work is born can really have an effect on its ultimate success and its way in the world, and so it's an exciting thing, and just like you with your group and any group that's committed to new music, it's an important responsibility.
So who's James Romig?
He has a very well-documented composer. He has a faculty position at Northern Illinois University, but he's not just an academic. He has music played all across the country with a lot of good support. I could click on his website right now and spout off some of his accomplishments and places he's had works played, or any of your guests can do that for themselves.
Well, did you get involved in the commission? Did you know about him, or was it
No, it was
Jeremy
actually
Brunk,
through the percussionists
okay.
themselves, and our percussionist, Jeremy Brunk. I mean, it worked out perfectly because Jeremy has been a principal player in this orchestra for many years. Actually, he was the timpanist in the MDSO when he was an undergraduate at Millikan. His senior year was my first year at Millikan, and he played that year. Then he went off and got a master's in Oklahoma and then a doctorate in performance over there at U of I in your neck of the woods. And now he's back on the faculty at Millikan teaching percussion and theory, and he composes. He's a really all-around super musician. And he is long overdue for a solo opportunity with the orchestra anyway. So when he signed on to the commission and said, would I be interested? I said, oh, absolutely. This will fit perfectly. And it fit perfectly on this concert because your troika was a great way to introduce it. Some years we like to start with a program that's just all about color. You know, it's the music on this concert is not the music that you might say has the most compelling structural integrity in the Western canon. You know, I mean, it's not a Beethoven or Brahms symphony or a Mahler symphony. These are the works on this concert, the Prokofiev TJ Suite and the Fountains of Rome and Bolero. They're all about sound and what a great writer for orchestra can do with the resources of an orchestra. And sometimes this is the fun way to open a season. And of course, to put a percussion concerto right on top of that is just like icing on the cake.
So tell us a little bit about the concerto.
Well, it's in two movements, one slow, one fast. The slow one uses almost all pitched percussion. Well, it's centered around the vibraphone sound, and it does use some coloristic things to surround it that are non-pitched. But basically, it's that movement is scored just for orchestral strings, no winds or brass. And it's just absolutely lovely. The colors in there just shimmer. There are sections where the strings will play a vibraphone, a chord along with the vibraphone. Then there'll be a section where the strings may start it and the vibraphone may join it. There'll be sections where the orchestra may play glissandos, and where each glissando ends, the vibraphone picks up the pitch. And then this is surrounded by crotales and little cymbals and things like this. It's mostly pitched, very very atmospheric, and just beautifully shimmering colors with a lot of harmonics in the strings, mostly chords and harmonies. And then that contrasts with the fast movement, which is just intensely rhythmic. And the orchestra, in this case strings and winds, are used to underscore and punctuate the rhythms of the solo percussion. And the rhythms in the solo percussion almost never stop. And that whole percussion setup is non-pitched percussion, gongs and wood blocks and things that range from high to low in terms of relative pitch, but don't have actual pitches. So the two movements complement very very well, and in fact they go so well together it doesn't even matter in which order you play them. The composer specifies that you can do fast slow or slow fast, or even just do one movement by itself.
How did the titles of the movements relate to the description you just gave, landscapes and portraits?
I haven't a clue. I mean, I have no idea why composers name things what they name them, unless it's something obvious like Bolero or something like that.
So this one is not obvious, apparently.
You know, we just talk about, you know, first movement, second movement, which is kind of funny because in rehearsal, we're actually doing what's called the second movement first, because that was our soloist's preference. But we rehearse the other one first because it's got the winds in it, and then we can let them go. So I'm saying things in rehearsal. All right, let's start with the first movement, which is really the second movement, but we're playing it first, but we're rehearsing it second. So, yeah.
Well, I wondered, I'm looking at the program here, and it says two One. I thought that's not
I was going to just use the titles, but that's Jake said that's the way he wanted it in there.
Well, there you
go. It's a great piece. It's exciting. It's different. We do have a super percussion studio here at Milliken, and we hear a lot of percussion music. And as you've mentioned, having judged our competition here, the students often win it. And I'm dealing with percussion concertos all the time, and I know that the audience loves the visual element as well as the musical element. And in fact, it'll be tantalizing because the setups, there are two setups, one for each movement. One is on my left and one is on my right, and they're so elaborate. We just don't want to waste the time trying to do that between pieces. So just as sometimes you have to play an overture with the piano there for the piano concerto that's next, we'll be playing the entire TJ suite, which opens the program with this percussion setup, in plain sight of the audience, which I'm sure will just add to the tantalization for the work to be heard.
Yeah, I bet it will. We're talking with Michael Luxner. You have a new name. Michael Luxner of the Milliken Decatur Symphony Orchestra and their concert with James Romig's Percussion Concerto featuring Jeremy Brunk will be Saturday evening at 7:30 at the Kirkland Fine Arts Center. You mentioned, Michael, that there's a lot of color involved in this program, and one of the most coloristic composers has to be Ottorino Respighi. Let's hear just a little bit of the opening of this piece from his Roman trilogy called The Fountains of Rome. This is The Fountains of Vile Giulia at Dawn. That was the opening portion of the opening section of The Fountains of Rome by Ottorino Respighi here on Live and Local. And Michael Luxner, tell us a little bit about this whole Roman trilogy and the fountains. Now, these surely are deliberately programmatic titles.
Oh, yeah, sure. And all those fountains really exist, and they're all still there in Rome. Each one, and of course, it's almost more like just an excuse to write a tone poem. But Respighi in the score explains that he explains that each fountain is described in music at the time of day when it seems most beautiful or its character is most revealed. What he does is really write. He writes a beautifully shaped single movement in four parts in an arch design that begins before dawn. The section you just played describes a pastoral scene that takes place as the sun might be breaking and as the farming or rural community awakes and animals are out and passing by. The middle section builds to an amazing climax, which he describes as blazing in the noonday sun. And then the final fountain, which is the one at the Via Medici, which is very romantic, is all about evening and with a chiming bell tolling midnight, dying away into the night. So, he almost sort of, he chooses the fountains as a unifying, really a conceit more than anything else, it's not the kind of pictorialism as in Richard Strauss. It's more or less just a great frame in which to structure this tone poem. I honestly think of the three Roman pieces, this is the most sophisticated. It's probably not as famous as the Pines of Rome, And in fact, we played the Pines of Rome here 3 years ago, and as it always is, was just such a complete smash with the audience, because the Pines begins with a great flurry of activity, gets quieter in the middle, and then builds to one of the most famous and stirring endings in all of orchestral music. And so I thought to do another one, I would do the Fountains, which is actually just an inversion of the same thing. It starts quietly, peaks in the middle, and then ends quietly. And because of the quiet ending, it perhaps doesn't, carry the audience away in this, ecstatic conclusion in the same way as the Pines. But I actually think it's more sophisticated in the way it shapes the four movements into one. It works as four sections, but it also really works as a perfectly shaped arch in a way that you find in rare other pieces, like the first movement of the Ravel Trio for piano, violin, and cello. So just a unique kind of shaping in that piece. And, of course, the colors, and, celeste and piano and two harps and all kinds of percussion and blazing brass and those wonderfully atmospheric violins like in the opening section you just played. It's got a lot to offer, and it's fun to play. People love their licks and fun to listen to.
I'm forgetting the third piece of the trilogy.
The third is the I can't even remember the name of the of the fountain itself. But
no, I mean of the trilogy.
There's
the Pines, the Fountains.
The Fountains was the first to be composed in the teens. Then Pines in the early 20s, and then in
festivals.
The late 20s, the Roman Festival.
Festival, that's right.
Festa Romana.
Yeah.
In which you are supposedly hearing depictions of ancient Roman spectacles in the Colosseum and things like this. And some people think that by that time, when Mussolini was already in power, that it was a thinly disguised paean to the power of the regime under which he was riding, in the guise of being about ancient Rome's glory. But either way, it's still great music.
Yeah. And then, of course, you're closing with a piece that has a structure of sorts. It just goes from small to huge in repeating the same tune over and over. Ravel's Bolero.
There are two tunes. You're talking, of course, about Ravel's Bolero, one of the most famous pieces ever written, and people may say it's not one of Ravel's most polished or sophisticated pieces, but like everything he wrote, absolutely everything, it is meticulously crafted. It does what it does absolutely perfectly. Do you know? I picked this up from a program note. I hadn't really thought about it. Ravel, unique among all composers, has absolutely everything he wrote in the repertoire. He didn't write that much. He wrote maybe, I think, about 60 pieces altogether. And every single one is in repertoire, whether it's an orchestra piece, piano piece, a chamber piece. I mean, that says something about, writing not that much, but making sure it's all of the highest quality. And Bolero, in addition to just being a lot of fun, of course by now it has a lot of extra musical associations for some people in the audience, but it is still a stunning experiment in control. The melodies of Bolero are in the textbooks. I mean, if you go to your music library over there and look at the kind of books that are written for composition classes, you will find those melodies for Bolero in there as models of, very daring and very sophisticated construction. How do you write something that long that seems so repetitive and keep it interesting? Where is the shaping? Where are the climaxes? How do the rhythms work? We've discovered some fascinating things. In fact, I brought these melodies into my one of my advanced theory classes and had them analyze it. And I learned some things from my students about it, about rhythmic flow, about accents, and about the complementary characters of the two melodies. One is very stable. It seems sort of rational and balanced. The other one seems a little bit possessed, a little bit demonic. It has some minor key inflections, and just as you've heard one of them twice, you're ready to hear the other one twice. And so it goes. And then, of course, in addition to just the general crescendo of getting louder and louder for 15 minutes, there are some amazing orchestral effects in there. There's some doublings. You know, for the first half of the piece, the melodies are heard almost always as a solo wind instrument. But once, out of the blue, he'll have something like a flute playing with a muted trumpet in the same octave. And you hear this, and it doesn't sound like a flute or a muted trumpet. It sounds like some instrument you've never heard before and will never hear again. And then there's the one where the horn plays the melody, and two piccolos play in different keys, thirds above, and it sounds like an organ mixture. So there is, like everything Ravel wrote, it's worth doing on strictly musical terms. And, of course, it's also a great way to end a concert.
Yeah, well, that's a great way to end the conversation, I guess, appropriately enough. Michael Luxner, my guest here on Live and Local, and he'll be conducting the Millikan Decatur Symphony Orchestra Saturday evening at 7:30 at the Kirkland Fine Arts Center. The program features the premiere performance of James Romig's Percussion Concerto, featuring Millikan faculty percussionist Jeremy Brunk. And I have to say, Michael, that you sound as excited about this music as I think I've heard you of any of the concerts we've talked about, and you've talked about those excitedly as well.
Well, I mean, shouldn't you be excited about the one you're about to do? So.
Well, I guess so, yeah.
Okay.
That says good things, I guess. So thanks very much, and we'll talk to you before the next one, I guess.
Always a pleasure.
The third movement from The Fountains of Rome by Ottorino Respighi, representing The Fountain of Trevi at Midday, a performance by the Philadelphia Orchestra, conducted by Riccardo Muti. And you can hear the complete Fountains of Rome in a performance by the Millikan Decatur Symphony, Saturday night at 7:30 at the Kirkland Fine Arts Center in Decatur. This is Live and Local on FM 90.9.
Help support the services you rely on, accurate news and engaging music, by building a member match fund. Your gift of $25, $50, or $75 to the fund adds excitement and value to the upcoming pledge drive and helps keep it short. Mail your check to WILL Radio, 300 North Goodwin, Urbana, 61801, or give online at willpledge.org.
I'm Kevin Kelly. Today's programs are made possible by Silver Creek in downtown Urbana, serving lunch and dinner every day with a brunch on Sunday. For 20 years, Silver Creek has served fresh and seasonally current dinners by the fireplace in warm wood ambiance. Silver Creek offers over 100 of the world's finest wines and draft beers. On this portion of the show, my guest is Jason Finkelman, who is curator of the Sudden Sound Concert Series at the University of Illinois' Krannert Art Museum, which is in Champaign. And they have two concerts this week, including tonight at 7:30, featuring Trio X, and tomorrow night at 7:30, featuring guitarist Mark Rebo. Jason, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me here, Kevin.
And this is a show of semi-regular guests, it seems. I almost think we ought to have a monthly session with you and Michael Luxner and some of these other guys who've been on with some regularity. And you always represent different kinds of groups, in particular the World Music Center at the University of Illinois. But also, is this your first time representing the Sudden Sound Concert? Maybe not.
I don't know. I probably not. I'd be surprised if it was.
Yeah, I would too. But in any event, remind us or tell us, if for those listening in the first time, what is the Sudden Sound Concert Series? Vic DiGeronimo asked me that in the intro to the show and said, well, that's what Jason is going to be here to tell us.
Well, the Sudden Sound Concert Series is an ongoing series of music, live music at the Krannert Art Museum. The focus of the series is improvised music and the jazz avant-garde. And I'd like to be able to present the widest breadth of the music as possible. We only have two concerts a semester, so when I look at the several years that have gone by, I'm very happy to see this very eclectic list of players from both pools and from the vast spectrum of improvised music.
When you say both pools, meaning?
Both pools of, say, avant-garde jazz specifically, and then just creative improvised music, maybe perhaps sound-oriented performance or straight improv that doesn't really fall into a category of, you know, that's not rooted in jazz, a non-idiomatic style, perhaps, of improvised music.
Improvised music has such a wide variety of sources. I mean, it can bluegrass is improvised music, but you're not talking about. You have something specific in mind, I think.
Yes, yes, I am. I am looking for music that pushes the boundaries and is, you know, if there was a bluegrass group, perhaps that was playing on a more avant-garde in a more avant-garde way, then I would probably consider them for the series. But
I don't know if they have avant-garde bluegrass.
Oh, I'm sure that there is. There is one jazz bluegrass band that I'm trying to remember the name of it, but it's escaping me right now. But you know, there are basically what I'm looking for is people. You know, there's certain groups of improvisers. I mean, again, you have kind of noise sound improvisers, or you have people who play very delicate. You know, like Pauline Oliveris and a whole lineage of music that has followed her path of kind of ambient and drone-oriented improvisation with the Deep Listening Band as an example. Or you have projects such as Trio X, which is an improvising ensemble. They go into the performance space without a plan. But what they do, and what I really like about what they do, is they present the history of jazz. You'll hear in their music, they'll quote standards or they'll quote very familiar classic jazz licks or melodies, but then they also move the music further out. And Joe McPhee is an amazing multi-instrumentalist, and he practices a lot of extended techniques on his instruments, which are saxophone and trumpet and other, you know, pocket trumpet and alto and tenor saxophone. So he might be playing, he might launch into a standard, but then all of a sudden in his solo, he'll start circular breathing perhaps and extend the form completely out, and the band will follow suit and they'll take it to wherever he's going, and then they might come back and quote what they were, you know, the music, the standard that they might have started with, or they might go into something completely different. It might be just blowing air through the saxophone to start the next piece.
So in circular breathing, just since you mentioned it, is when somebody is able to continuously play apparently without breathing, but in fact they're sort of taking it in through the nose and keeping it. It's an interesting and difficult technique to master. Joe McPhee, you mentioned the other groups, the other performers in this group, Dominic Duval and Jay Rosen on bass and drums, respectively.
That's right. And, you know, it's interesting hearing all three of them together. I think Jay Rosen comes from a little bit of a younger generation, or maybe even Dominic, I think, might be a little younger than Joe. So, I mean, you have these guys all practiced in their various musical styles and then coming together and creating music in the moment that is rooted in the history of jazz. And, you know, Jay Rosen has, he seems to have on many of these sets of music. They just released a 5-CD set of their tour in 2008. And on a number of occasions, there's extended drum pieces. And then they launch, you know, Dominic Duvall is such an amazing bass player, and he's long been established in New York as one of the top heavy bass players in New York City, in the progressive jazz circles.
Heavy was no pun intended, I get it.
No.
He's a larger looking guy. And these guys have been at the Crannon Art Museum before.
That's right. I'm very, very thrilled to have as part of this 5-CD set of their tour of 2008, in its entirety, the concert at the Crannard Art Museum from October 16th. So we have something queued up from there, which we'll get to in a second, but there's also music here on that tour from Colgate University, Edgefest in Ann Arbor, Michigan. There's a place in Iowa and also Davenport, Iowa, and Bowling Green State University in Ohio. So this documents in a great way the tour, but I think that this is the only disc that is the concert in its entirety. So this is recorded on the CIMPOL label, which is Creative Improvised Music Projects on Location. And Creative Improvised Music Projects is a long is a label that has long supported progressive jazz, and they have over 280 recordings out on their label under CIMP. And there's a lot more than that. There's also Cadence Jazz Records. There's multiple labels, and now the newest label's On Location.
You said you've got something queued up from that 2008 concert, and it's of the sort that you described earlier from Trio X, where they do take off from, in this case, a standard.
That's right.
A tune that's become a standard, I guess, Old Man River.
That's right. That's what we've got queued up. And you'll get to hear somewhere in the middle where Joe kind of takes it out a little and then brings it back.
It's a Trio X who are going to be on the Sudden Sound Concert Series tonight at 7:30 at Crannard Art Museum on, what is the name of that street?
That's Peabody.
Peabody Drive.
500 East Peabody Drive in Champaign.
Right in the middle of the University of Illinois campus. Live on the Crannard Art Museum's Sudden Sound Concert Series 2 years ago, October of 2008. It was Trio X and their version of Old Man River from Jerome Kern's musical Showboat. Of course, that tune has now become something of a standard. And they're going to be playing again at the Crannard Art Museum tonight at 7:30. And with us on Live and Local for this portion of the show is Jason Finkelman, who is the curator of that Sudden Sound Concert Series. How did you discover Trio X, and for that matter, any of the people who show up on this series?
Well, as you might recall, I moved here from New York City. I was part of the New York City music scene, and I hung out a lot at the Knitting Factory. In fact, that was like my office for a long time. But I actually met Joe McPhee through Pauline Oliveris, and one of the great concerts of my past was being able to organize on the main stage at the Knitting Factory a concert with the Deep Listening Band, which is Pauline Oliveris a group led by Pauline Oliveris with David Gamper I'm terrible with my memory here. But Joe McPhee also joined us on that date, and Straylight was my band in the Stuart Dempster on trombone. And that's the Deep Listening Band. And so that was a wonderful night, and that was one of a couple times that Straylight got to play with Joe McPhee. He played with us once before, also in a series that we had there called Stray Light Dialogues.
Stray Light?
Stray Light's the name of the band that I left in New York. And that was electric guitar and electronics and percussion. We were a completely free improv group, but we had kind of what I describe as an ambient avant-world sound with the organic percussion, with a Buchla music easel doing electronics, and an electric guitar player who that did a lot of extended techniques and looping with the guitar. So what was interesting about performing with Joe McPhee in that series was that he brought like a little micro mini synth and really kind of, you know, played with what we were doing, you know. And, you know, it's interesting when you listen to improvisers or you perform with different improvisers, because different people will, their character or their personality will come through in various ways. So anyway, that's how I met Joe McPhee. And then Mark Ribot I used to see all the time in New York. And, you know, he was a hero of the guitar player in Straylight, you know. He was one of those folks with John Zorn and crew that were the heart of the New York, downtown New York scene at that time, you know, in the, you know, in the 90s and before. So the way that Mark Ribot ended up on the series was the fact that his brother is employed here at the University of Illinois. And having met his brother, we were able to figure out a way to set up a performance. And, you know...
And you didn't have to pay for housing, I'll bet.
And we don't have to pay for housing on this one. But, you know... I've long been familiar with Mark Ribot, and the last time I saw him was in a solo concert that he did in Europe. He was playing the music of Albert Eiler. And now, you know, so he goes from very great extremes of musical, he digs into great varying musical styles. And his newest release is quite surprising to most listeners because it's called Silent Movies. And it's on Pi Recordings, a great label that supports progressive jazz out of New York City. And also, I think the founder of Pi Recordings was also involved at the Knitting Factory around the time that I was hanging out there. But this is a concept record, and it's very kind of quiet and introspective. It looks at film and the creation of music for film. So some of these tracks were created four projects, some projects that were released, some projects that weren't released, also for silent films that Mark might have performed live to, such as Charlie Chaplin film The Kid, which he did at Merkin Concert Hall in January of 2010 as part of the New York Guitar Festival, and then other compositions of his that he's imagined for film. So this is the theme that's going on in this recording. And there are other musicians who have covered this theme quite successfully.
And the disc is called Silent Movie? Or
Silent Movies.
Yeah. What's the tune we're going to hear?
We're going to hear a tune called Beto. And what I like about this is it is, as most of this record is, very kind of introspective, quiet music. But this one just gets a little edgier towards the latter part of the song, and then comes back.
And is this bateau as in French for boat?
Yeah, I think so.
How's that spelled there?
B-A-T-E-A-U.
Yeah, I believe so. So Mark Ribot, whose last name is spelled, by the way, R-I-B-O-T, French style, and he's going to be at the Sudden Sound series at the Crandon Art Museum tomorrow night.
Right, and that's a special event because we don't normally have concerts at the museum on Friday night. So again, the concert will be at 7:30, and admission, as always, is free for tonight and tomorrow night. And so Mark Ribot on Friday night, and here's something you might hear.
On Live and Local.
Thank you.
music by Marc Ribot. He was the composer and player called Bateau, French for boat. And you can, you know, you can sort of hear, imagine the rolling, rocking of a boat on the water. And he's going to be at the Crannett Art Museum in Champaign tomorrow night at 7:30, part of the Sudden Sound Concert Series. Tonight on the series, it's Trio X. And we should have a couple of minutes to go out with another of Marc Ribot's before we finish up the show, which we're going to do very shortly. This is Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly. Our programs today are made possible with support from the ISU School of Music. The ISU Symphony opens the season this Thursday. That's tonight at 8 p.m. at the ISU Center for the Performing Arts. The program features Shostakovich's Symphony No. 5 and the world premiere of Helmut Fuchs' Chicago Suite. We also have support from the Corkscrew Wine Emporium, 203 North Vine, Urbana, with wines, beers, and spirits for the serious collector, the first-time buyer. Wine tastings are held on Saturdays from noon to 4 in the Bouvance Tasting Room. More information is at thecorkscrew.com. Quick look at some other events in our area you can go out and see and hear live. The faculty showcase recital is tonight at Eastern Illinois University in Charleston at the Downa Fine Arts Center Recital Hall, tonight at 7:30. And UI Jazz Combos are at the Iron Post in Urbana tonight at 7 o'clock. At the Little Theater on the Square, or sponsored by the Little Theater on the Square, it's a fundraiser called Sounds of Broadway at the Lifespan Center in Mattoon. That's tonight at 6:15. Timber Train is at the Kickapoo Landing tomorrow evening at 5:30 in Oakwood. And it's Dracula the Undead being put on by the Rantoul Theater Group at 8 o'clock Friday and Saturday and into the weekend. Jazz Ensembles and Wind Symphony together are performing at Dvorak Concert Hall at EIU campus in Charleston Friday evening at 7:30. And Rhythm and Roots is an ongoing show, exhibit sort of musical show at the Vespasian Warner Public Library in Clinton. We're going to have a feature on that next week. I'm looking forward to that. And that's every day for the next couple of weeks yet. You're listening to Live and Local on WYNL FM 90.9 and HD Urbana. We are a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois. And I want to say thanks to Jason Finkelman for coming on the show today.
Thanks a lot.
And we'll be having you back for one concert or another, no doubt. Why don't why don't you just tell us briefly what's the last tune we're going to have from Marc Ribot?
Why don't we cue up number 12?
Okay.
That's The Kid. That's from the silent film that he did at the New York Guitar Festival in January.
And it's Live and Local on FM 90.9. Have a great day.